Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Sun Sounds of Arizona. The program is Business World, and I'm Steve Klein. We're going to start with some short-form articles today, just snapshots of what's going on in the business world. The first concerns NVIDIA. NVIDIA shares faltered Monday after the Financial Times reported that the company is working with major financial firms on a $500 billion AI infrastructure funding package, raising investor concerns about concentration in the tech sector. In a new 6,500-word manifesto, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg outlined his vision for the future of AI, calling for greater federal regulation and a strategy focused on individual empowerment. An appeals court is allowing thousands of lawsuits against social media companies alleging young people became addicted to their services to move forward, rejecting an effort from the firms to dismiss them. If you're a movie fan, here's a word about Hollywood box office year-to-date. A slate of Hollywood blockbusters plus a pair of surprising breakout horror hits has pushed the summer domestic box office gross over $4 billion for just the second time since the COVID-19 pandemic. The domestic gross year-to-date for Spider-Man Brand New Day is $655 million, followed by Toy Story 5 with $470 million and The Odyssey at $461 million. $263.3 million is the U.S. box office total for Obsession, a low-budget horror movie that took the industry by storm. And by the way, the entire production budget for Obsession was $750,000. And finally, 2023 was the last time the summer domestic box office reached the $4 billion mark, thanks largely to the success of Barbie and Oppenheimer. And now to Berkshire Hathaway. Berkshire Hathaway's insurance sector suffered a hit last quarter as GEICO saw its earnings decline amid an increase in auto claims and rising injury costs. GEICO's pre-tax underwriting earnings in the second quarter of 2025 were $994 million, a nearly 45% drop from the $1.82 billion a year earlier. GEICO's loss ratio was 76.6%, which is the share of premiums paid out in claims in the second quarter. It's nearly up 5% from the same period in 2025. And finally, 11%, the increase in bodily injury claim frequency over the past 2 years, according to auto insurance software firm CCC Intelligent Solutions. Next, we're going to talk banks and blockchain. This is from Forbes magazine. $5.5 trillion bet. Why every major bank is racing to put Wall Street on the blockchain. Wells Fargo, the country's fourth largest bank, with about $2.3 trillion in assets, said last week it would offer tokenized deposits to corporate and commercial clients this fall. Not long ago, the announcement would have been written off as yet another blockchain trial balloon. Today, it looks more like keeping up with the competition. JP Morgan and Citigroup already operate similar services. Both banks, along with Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and more than a dozen other large lenders, are also participating in an initiative operated by the Clearinghouse, a bank-owned payments company like Zelle that is developing a shared system for moving tokenized deposits between institutions. Tokenization is a mechanism for representing an asset or a claim on one as a digital token on a blockchain, an immutable digital ledger. What tokenization changes is not the asset, but how its ownership is recorded and transferred. In a conventional securities trade, the broker, the clearinghouse, custodian, and bank may each update a separate system, then check that their versions agree. Blockchain technology, first devised by Bitcoin's pseudonymous creator Satoshi Nakamoto, can give them a synchronized record of who owns what and who owns whom. Citibank estimates that tokenized securities could reach approximately $5.5 trillion by 2030, while Boston Consulting Group and digital securities exchange ADDX put the potential market for tokenized illiquid assets at $16.1 trillion. The figures describe different markets, but they capture the scale of the bet. Tokenization is at last becoming a Wall Street business, not merely a crypto slogan. And here's a quick tale of successful entrepreneurship, this from Fortune magazine, dated August 12th. This entrepreneur built Uber for the yellow school bus. 13 years ago, Rita Narayan was a digital whiz, overseeing a $1 billion line of business at eBay, when she was faced with a very analog problem: how to get her kids, 3 and 8 at the time, to daycare and school without missing meetings. Her dilemma was filled with echoes from her childhood in the foothills of the Himalayas. My mom, an educator in India, had left her job for the very same reason, Narayan says. And I'm here sitting in Silicon Valley at the center of innovation, and I'm also thinking, would I have to leave my job, my career? Narayan did leave eBay, but not to become her kid's chauffeur. Along with the two brothers, Vivek and Abhishek Garg, she co-founded Zoom, a Redwood City, California-based student transportation outfit that's trying to use technology to improve every aspect of the student bus experience. Zoom leases bus yards, buys buses, and small student shuttle vans, and connects them via a tablet and GPS to an app that allows parents and teachers alike to track the vehicles on their routes. Launched in 2015, Zoom has grown into a transportation unicorn. With $450 million in funding raised, it is valued at $1.7 billion. Revenue in 2025 hit $333 million, up 35% from 2024, with 5,000 schools nationwide paying for the service. This momentum vaulted CEO Narayan, 53, into the 2026 Forbes 50 Over 50 list, our annual roundup produced in partnership with Mika Brzezinski and her Know Your Value initiative of women who notched their greatest professional accomplishments after the age of 50. America spends nearly $40 billion a year to get kids to and from school, and as Forbes senior editor Maggie McGrath writes, it's one of the biggest line items in K-12 education spending, a combination of driver shortage and patchwork of state-by-state approaches to busing means not all kids actually take a yellow school bus to and from elementary, middle, or high school. The rest rely on parents, guardians, or public transit. Do you like to go to concerts? Here's an article from Fortune magazine dated August 11th. The economics of concerts is squeezing fans and artists. Fans are shelling out hundreds of dollars to see their favorite acts on tour this summer, from BTS to Noah Kahan. But how did live music become so expensive? The average concert ticket cost just under $133 in 2025, according to data from Polestar. That's slightly below 2024's peak, but well above 2019's average of $96. And the price of admission to movies, theaters, and concerts has risen by nearly one-third since the beginning of 2019, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, slightly outpacing inflation overall. But as ticket prices climb, it's not just concertgoers being squeezed. The cost of putting on a tour, from labor to lighting, audio, and trucks, has surged since the pandemic, explains Joe Sanchez, CEO and founder of 1826 Group, a global experience agency whose clients include A$AP Rocky and My Chemical Romance. The shift from record sales to streaming has increasingly pushed artists to rely on live performance for their income, while the top touring artists like Bad Bunny, Lady Gaga, BTS, Ed Sheeran, and AC/DC grossed nine figures between mid-November and mid-May, according to a Pollstar report, others have canceled tours or scaled back, like the Pussycat Dolls and the Black Keys. It's increasingly harder and harder and harder for anyone but the top 25 grossing tours of the year to make money for anyone, Sanchez tells Forbes Daily. State and federal regulators have also taken issue with Ticketmaster's role, and in April, a jury found Live Nation and Ticketmaster operating as an illegal monopoly. The states that pursued the case continued to push for a breakup of Live Nation and Ticketmaster. The jury determined Ticketmaster had been overcharging consumers in 22 states by $1.72 per ticket, a seemingly insignificant figure that Rebecca Haw Allensworth, an antitrust professor at Vanderbilt Law School, says is not really reflective of the anti-competitive behavior here. You have to think about a world in which there was strong competition for all of these different products, she tells Forbes Daily. We do know from economic theory and experience that the more competition there is, the lower these prices are. And now a very quick article on Meta's problems in the courtroom. A New Mexico judge ordered Meta to pay $942 million for its handling of child safety on its social media platforms. The judge's ruling noted that the parent company of Facebook and Instagram implemented platform features designed to optimize engagement that are harmful to teenagers and had failed to adequately communicate the risk to its users. And now for those of you carrying a few extra pounds, here's an article on Amazon pharmacies. Amazon announced last week that its pharmacy would distribute popular GLP-1 weight loss drugs to eligible Medicare patients for just $50 a month, making the medications much more accessible. The pharmacy's new pricing is part of the federal Medicare GLP-1 Bridge Program, which covers costs for patients with obesity. $1,200 to $1,500 is the monthly cost for drugs like Wegovy and Zepbound when they first hit the market. About $300 million is how much the new price reductions will save customers, according to Amazon. And finally, 72% is how many adults age 20 and older are overweight or obese, according to CDC data from 2023. And of course, because it's impossible to ignore Elon Musk for very long, here's an article from Fortune by Joshua Honey, dated August 11th. Everything's bigger in Texas. Musk's planned $16.8 billion chip factory is five times bigger than the world's current largest building. Elon Musk is betting that the next phase of his sprawling technology empire will require a building on a scale that has never existed before. SpaceX and Tesla are building Terafab, a 100 million square foot semiconductor manufacturing facility in Grimes County, Texas, more than five times the size of the world's largest building. Terafab, Texas will be the largest and most valuable building on Earth by far, and it will be stunningly beautiful, Musk wrote on X. With about 18.9 million square feet of floor space, the New Century Global Center in Chengdu, China, currently holds the record for the world's largest building, but Terafab is expected to exceed that quickly. The first phase of the Terafab project represents a capital investment of more than $16.8 billion, and will create 3,000 new jobs, Texas Governor Greg Abbott wrote in a press release. The accompanying vision is even more ambitious than the building itself. The Terafab website describes the project as a vertically integrated chip factory that will combine logic, memory, and advanced packaging under one roof. Both SpaceX and Tesla will benefit from the facility, which is designed to produce more than 1 terawatt of compute annually. We're now embarking on the most epic chip-building effort, combining logic, memory, and advanced packaging all under one roof, said Musk in a press release. The project seeks to close the gap between the chip production necessary for today and the demand for future production when humanity, according to Musk, eventually embarks on space travel. TerraFab is bringing cutting-edge manufacturing to America, creating thousands of high-paying jobs, he continued, and enabling us to produce AI chips at scale for use on Earth and in space. TerraFab is less of a conventional semiconductor factory, rather than an attempt by Musk to build an enormous piece of his own technology supply chain. Both companies expect their combined demand for computing power to eventually exceed 1 terawatt. TerraFab will bring chip manufacturing, packaging, and testing into one singular operation. The project aspires to launch a galactic civilization by harnessing all the energy on a planet, echoing Musk's sci-fi dreams. TerraFab's website ties the factory to Musk's longer-term vision of AI infrastructure. According to the site, the project is intended to produce AI chips at scale, supporting a vision that includes as many 1 million Tesla Optimus robots, 10 million tons of mass launched into orbit annually, and more than 1 terawatt of solar power. SpaceX went public in June, raising $75 billion by selling 555 million shares at $135 apiece. While the company had an initial valuation of about $1.77 trillion at the time, the public markets have already forced investors to confront the costs behind Musk's ambitions. SpaceX reported a $541 million loss in its first quarterly earnings report as a public company, despite generating $7.8 billion in revenue. The $16.8 billion announced for TerraFab is only the initial investment. Musk hopes to use taxpayer dollars to offset some of the costs associated with building the largest single property in the world. The project has filed 8 tax incentive applications with the 2 local school districts, asking to freeze school maintenance and operation property tax at roughly 40% of appraised value for 10 years per phase. TerraFab is asking the state to cover the difference of the maintenance and operations and interest and sinking taxes using the Texas Job, Energy, Technology, and Innovation, or JETI program. The company's explanation for the tax breaks centered on the cost differential between Texas and competing jurisdictions, it wrote in the applications. Absent the limitation, the projected IRR would fall below the minimum investment threshold, and competing jurisdictions, for instance, Arizona, would present a more favorable after-tax return, the application read, in which case the project would be likely to relocate outside Texas. To Abbott, Texas is willing to take the hit. Texas extended SpaceX a $30 million Texas Enterprise Fund grant, according to Abbott's press release. SpaceX is already headquartered in Texas, as well as both Starbase launch facility and its manufacturing plant. TerraFab is just another testament to Musk's Texas footprint, Abbott said. Texas is where big ideas grow even bigger, the governor said in the release. He called TerraFab a first-of-its-kind facility that would accelerate chip production and create thousands of jobs. The TerraFab website compares the planned 100 million square feet with Tesla's roughly 10 million square foot Gigafactory, Texas, and says the facility is designed around production at terawatt scale. SpaceX and the office of Governor Abbott both did not immediately respond to a request for comment. I'm sure you've read articles about insider trading on the political front. Here's an article about Kalshi. It's by Joshua Honey. It's from Fortune magazine, dated August 11th. Kalshi cracks down on insider trading as Trump family looks to increase prediction market presence. In Washington, there's plenty of information that can move a market. A government official may know what a president is preparing to announce, whether a particular policy is about to change, or which officials will attend a major event. As prediction markets increasingly list contracts tied to political decisions and government activity, that information can become directly tradable. The issue is already emerging on Kalshi, which has become one of the industry's largest platforms. The company has spent years building surveillance systems designed to identify suspicious trading, and Kalshi tells Fortune it has begun aggressively referring suspected misconduct to federal authorities. Being federally regulated means that Kalshi bans market manipulation, insider trading, and has limits on the types of markets it lists, and publicly reports all trades to the CFTC daily, Laura Frank, a Kalshi spokesperson, told Fortune. We've also spent years building custom prediction market trade surveillance and enforcement systems that are similar to those used in the stock market. Kalshi terms of service and exchange rules prohibit market manipulation and insider trading. Users must complete identity verification before they can trade, and Kalshi says its system monitors activity for potential violations. Earlier this year, those systems flagged trades by former Congressman George Santos connected to markets related to the State of the Union address. According to Kalshi, the company was able to investigate and refer the matter to the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, providing the evidence to authorities. Kalshi is also producing its own enforcement action against Santos for violating the exchange's rules. If monetary penalties are recovered, the company told Fortune it will work to reimburse affected traders. Federal authorities have also examined the trading activity of Gabriel Perez, a former White House teleprompter operator. Officials have investigated whether Perez used advanced knowledge of Trump's prepared remarks to trade on Kalshi markets tied to particular words or topics that would appear in presidential speeches. Earlier this year, Kalshi caught a Mr. Beast employee and a long-shot candidate for California governor for making insider trades. Columbia Law Professor Joshua Mitz and University of Haifa professor of law, Maureen Ofer, wrote in a study that bets on prediction markets achieved a nearly 70% win rate, well in excess of chance, estimating that traders earned $143 million in profits. While prediction markets have staunchly opposed allowing insider trading to occur on their platforms, Robin Hanson, professor at George Mason University and prediction market pioneer, argues that insider trading is necessary. He previously told Fortune that you want them trading, referring to insiders, because the purpose of the market is to inform decisions. Amid the debate about insider information, the Trump family is increasingly getting into the prediction market business. President Donald Trump's media company, Trump Media and Technology Group, is developing Truth Predict, a prediction market that would allow users to trade contracts tied to major events and milestones. At the same time, the company launched Truth API, a premium service that gives Wall Street rapid machine-readable access to posts on Truth Social, including Trump's own, potentially allowing traders to react to market-moving information seconds before it reaches the general public. The combination is creating an unusual new financial ecosystem around the presidency. Trump's public statements can move markets. Investors can pay for faster access to those statements. And a Trump-backed company is building a platform to let users wager on political and economic outcomes. And Trump's family is already deeply connected to the prediction market industry. Donald Trump Jr. is a paid strategic advisor to Kalshi, while his venture capital firm 1789 Capital invested in rival prediction market Polymarket. Trump Jr. also joined Polymarket's advisory board last year. That means the president's eldest son has relationships with both of the industry's biggest prediction market companies, while his father is developing a competing platform of his own. There is no public evidence that Trump Jr. has used privileged government information to trade on either platform. Donald Trump Jr.'s team and Trump Media Technology Group did not immediately respond to a request for comment. So, you may have noticed that beef prices are up. In fact, they're way up. Here's an article by Sasha Rogelberg from Fortune magazine, dated August 12th. Record beef prices are minting fortunes for ranchers, but straining the American farmers who fatten their cattle. Last week, Tyson Foods CEO Donnie King offered investors a sobering report on beef prices. "Beef hasn't performed the way we expected," King said during an earnings presentation, "and we're not pretending otherwise. These soaring prices have not just left meatpacking giants like Tyson looking for answers. They've impacted the entire cattle industry. And while some sectors, like feedlot farmers, are beginning to reel from dwindling inventories, others, like ranchers, are being minted as the major winners." The Bureau of Labor Statistics' latest Consumer Price Index data indicates that beef prices have soared 11.8% in the last year, including 1.2% on a monthly basis in June. Ground beef prices are up 12.4% year over year, and beef roast prices have increased even higher, up 13.8% from a year ago. While a natural cattle cycle shifts inventories roughly every decade, leading to ebbs and flows in beef prices, the current herd sizes are the smallest they've been since 1951, as a result of severe droughts drying up pastures, as well as a spread of flesh-eating screwworms limiting cattle imports from Mexico. The tight supply means that those at the foundation of the cattle industry are seeing profits grow. Cow-calf ranchers who raise permanent herds of mother calves to sell for beef produce the supply of cows for the entire industry and have been able to hike prices. Prices for feeder calves are expected to increase from $437.44 per hundredweight today to up to $467 per hundredweight in 2027's second quarter, according to David Anderson, a Texas A&M professor of agricultural economies. At that primary level, cow-calf production, they're making more money. Daryl Peel, a professor of agribusiness specializing in livestock at Oklahoma State University, told Fortune, "They're making record returns, by and large." Most other parts of the industry, however, are under greater pressure, having to buy more expensive cattle while facing slimmer margins, including rising input costs for fertilizers, chemicals, and equipment as a result of tariffs, Peel explained. "Most economists expect those costs to remain elevated or continue to increase. Pretty much everybody above cow-calf producers is a margin operation, and most of those margins are under some sort of adverse pressure," Peel said. The farther we go with this, the squeeze on cattle numbers is getting tighter and tighter. Among those sectors are feedlot farmers who ration grain to cattle in the last few months of their lives to have the animals quickly gain weight before they're processed. For a while, the feedlot sector could maintain profitability because there's about a six-month time lag between when farmers buy the calves and when they're again sold to be processed, Peel noted. Feedlots have been able to stay full by keeping turnover down, even as their own incoming supply of cattle also slows. But that's likely to change as the shortage continues. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Cattle on Feed report for June, while the number of cattle and calves on feed increased year over year for the month, there's been a year-over-year decrease in both cattle being placed on feed and feed cattle being marketed. Feedlots are having trouble, Peel said. They're going to have more and more trouble in the coming months of maintaining that volume and keeping their feedlots full. Other parts of the industry are also struggling, including meat packers like Tyson Foods. Last week, the Arkansas-based food producer saw a $138 million operating loss on its beef segment, and sales volumes in the segment dropped 15.9%, while prices rose 12.1%. The bifurcated fortunes of the cow-calf ranchers and the feedlot farmers is reflective of the challenges of the cattle industry faces today, Peel said. But it's not necessarily unique to this shortage. The boom-bust cycle of herd inventory is a natural part of the industry. When herd inventories are high, cow-calf ranchers struggle with a glut of cattle to sell. Meanwhile, feedlots, meat packers, and other parts of the industry enjoy greater profits. It's oftentimes the case that when one sector is doing well, another part of the industry is struggling, Peel said. Over time, they all tend to average out. What makes this cattle cycle different is that it's been exaggerated by external factors, primarily the droughts, Peel said. Rebuilding herd inventories takes some time to begin with, and is even more challenging when there's a deeper shortage, as there's an even smaller population of females. The beef industry may be familiar with the up-and-down dynamics of the cattle cycle, but the prolonged shortage means the sector struggling will have to flounder a little longer than what is typical. It's been a slower-than-usual process, Peel said. It could have started 2 years ago, but it hasn't for various reasons, and so we're still kind of waiting for that to happen. It's going to prolong this period of tight supplies and the margin structure that we currently have today. Here's a quick one on Google's AI program. This is from Fortune magazine, dated August 10th. Google's Frontier AI lab had a major leadership shakeup last week, but the fault lines were visible well before then. In 2023, Google merged DeepMind and Google Brain, its two premier AI research operations, into Google DeepMind as it scrambled to keep up with competitors OpenAI and Anthropic. DeepMind founder Demis Hassabis ran the combined division from London, while chief scientist Jeff Dean remained in Silicon Valley. But it quickly became clear that the center of gravity had shifted toward Google's headquarters in Mountain View, California. And while the company said it remains committed to London, one former employee based in the UK called it the Americafication of DeepMind. The next article may depress you, so beware. This again is from Fortune magazine, dated August 11th. It's by Eleanor Pringle. Interest on the national debt now costs the Treasury $3 billion a day, finds the CBO, after U.S. spends $10 billion propping up the currency of its top lender. The government's nearly $40 trillion national debt is now costing the Treasury more than $3 billion a day in service payments, according to a new report from the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO. In its August budget update, the CBO reported that net interest on public debt totaled $963 billion between October 2025, when the fiscal year begins, and July 2026. That equates to $96.3 billion a month, or approximately $3.18 billion a day, over the 303 days in between. Interest payments on the debt have grown by $117 billion, or 14%, compared to the same period last year, the CBO added, on account of the debt being larger than it was in the first 10 months of fiscal year 2025, and because of higher long-term interest rates. The CBO, led by Director Phil Swagel, added, "Declines in short-term rates partially mitigated the overall rise in interest payments." The latest budget update is further evidence for debt hawks, who suggest policymakers are heading in the wrong direction when it comes to fiscal responsibility. Deficits totaling $1.8 trillion in the first 10 months of this fiscal year, $169 billion more than the deficit recorded the same period last fiscal year. With that information in mind, the CBO updated its deficit projection for the total fiscal year to $2.1 trillion, $200 billion more than the deficit projected in February of this year. The value of U.S. debt isn't necessarily a concern for economists. It does, after all, form the basis of the U.S. Treasury market, one of the safest asset classes on the planet. The concern for debt hawks is that the U.S. debt-to-GDP ratio is becoming unbalanced, currently at 122% per the St. Louis Fed, and lenders at some stage will attach a higher risk premium to lending, pushing up interest as a result. While the bull case is that the U.S. can rebalance by boosting economic growth, bearish concerns range from inflation to the crowding out of public investment by interest payments. Bridgewater Associates founder Ray Dalio has warned as much, saying a debt-induced heart attack will be prompted by debt payments crowding out public spending. The CBO report comes after the Treasury's move last week to backstop the Japanese yen. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent confirmed that the move was to help stabilize currency in the region as a whole, telling CNBC, "A stable yen is not only important for the U.S., but very important for the entire region." The Treasury Secretary had been clear in his attention to support the currency. A photo of Bessent's to-do list from a cabinet meeting at the end of July featured a reminder to buy $5 to $10 billion worth of the currency. A stable outlook for the Asian, and more specifically the Japanese economy, is indeed of significant importance to the U.S. Treasury data confirms that Japan is the top holder of U.S. debt. If Japan sold those bonds to buy its own currency, it would drive up yields on U.S. bonds. The data, updated to May 2026, confirms Japan owns $1.14 trillion in U.S. Treasury securities. Japan has been the top holder of U.S. securities for some time, with its holdings sitting above the $1.1 trillion mark for the past year. At the time of the intervention, the yen rallied as high as 155 to the dollar, but since has unwound to approximately 159. Markets had, by and large, expected the move, as USBS's Paul Donovan highlighted in a note to clients this morning. Policy has not changed, and there is little evidence yen weakness was the result of a speculative attack, so this drift back to market perceived fair value is hardly surprising. Earlier in the program, we talked about Mark Zuckerberg writing a manifesto about AI. Now we're going to go into a little more detail on what that 6,500-word essay contained. The article is from Fortune magazine and the Associated Press. The title of the article is Mark Zuckerberg Writes a 6,500-word Essay Calling Concentration the Biggest AI Risk, Days After His Model Hacked Another Company. Meta Platform CEO Mark Zuckerberg laid out a vision Monday of what he said artificial intelligence can do for the world, imagining a future where everyone has their own all-knowing AI agent that strives to improve all aspects of their lives. Zuckerberg detailed his ambitions for the technology in a 6,500-word essay published online, where he outlined why he favors open-source AI technology, in which developers make key components accessible for anyone to modify, build, and examine. In a document derided by critics as fantastical, Zuckerberg said his company is working toward an era where everyone will have the tools to create new businesses, receive PhD-level tutoring, and provide personal lifestyle tips. His 8-year-old daughter, he wrote, can already code her ideas and quickly produce videos. Everyone will soon have invention superpowers, Zuckerberg wrote. Zuckerberg warned of risks if control of advanced AI is concentrated with a select few companies, institutions, or governments. On Monday, Meta announced the release of a new open-source AI model, Muse Glimmer, which can run on a personal computer, and Zuckerberg said the company would also provide a way for developers to access a more powerful AI model, Muse Spark 1.2. Meta makes AI models like several other tech companies and uses them to power platforms such as Instagram and Facebook. The Menlo Park company also makes them available to developers who can create their own apps and features. Critics said Zuckerberg was not reckoning fully with the risks inherent in AI's rapid development, noting recent incidents where AI models, including Meta's own, hacked other companies on at least 3 separate occasions. Anthony Aguirre, president and CEO of the AI safety nonprofit Future of Life Institute, asked, "What on earth makes Meta think that they or anyone can control something exponentially smarter, faster, and more capable? Meta's chosen path is ultimately one of human replacement and disempowerment. But there is an alternative pro-human path, one that brings about individual flourishing and scientific breakthroughs with controllable AI tools. What's urgently needed now is for governments to facilitate a pause on advanced AI development and steer us onto the pro-human path before it's too late," Aguirre said. In his essay, Zuckerberg outlined why he thought open source is a better path for fair development of AI. He warned that if control of AI superintelligence is too concentrated, it would lead to less favorable outcomes for everyone else. The key, he wrote, is finding a balance that ensures advanced AI is broadly distributed to empower billions of people equitably. Meta has long been a proponent of open sourcing its AI models, but has struggled to keep up with rivals such as OpenAI, Anthropic, and Google that have not taken the same approach. Zuckerberg made what could be a veiled reference to Meta's rivals without naming specific companies. "Most other labs are focused on building AI for companies, governments, or other institutions. So if those labs lead, then the balance of power will favor larger institutions over individuals," he said. Zuckerberg also included policy recommendations for keeping the U.S. ahead of rivals, including China. "The United States and its allies need to speed up building energy capacity and infrastructure to stay competitive," he said. Zuckerberg called for authorities to reconsider their positions on distillation, which involves training a less capable model on the outputs of a stronger one. The Trump administration has vowed to crack down on Chinese AI companies using distillation to extract technical features from U.S. AI models. Anthropic earlier this year accused China's DeepSeek of using distillation. Some have tried to frame distillation as harmful, but I think it's important to protect the principle that you can learn from anything you can observe, Zuckerberg said. This is how the world works, and the U.S. will not be able to lead if we restrict ourselves on this front. Matt Lane, senior policy counsel at the nonprofit digital rights advocacy group Fight for the Future, called Zuckerberg annoyingly out of touch on his best day, but said the CEO is right about the importance of open source AI. Shared access to open source AI systems is important for protection in a world where AI can be used to hack into electronic systems, like voting systems and benefits infrastructure, he said. But he said only Meta will benefit if everyone were to use Meta-designed AI systems, even if they were fully open source. Open source AI needs to be supported beyond these corporate interests. We, unlike Zuckerberg, hope for as much competition as possible, he said. Next is an article from Fortune magazine by Mia Osman-Bekoff, dated August 11th. This is a statement from Jamie Dimon that you may not have thought of before. Jamie Dimon warns that dollar dominance depends on the military. If we're not the strongest military in 25 years, we won't be the reserve currency either. Jamie Dimon has a warning for Americans accustomed to the dollar sitting atop the global financial system. U.S. military supremacy may be one of the things keeping it there. The J.P. Morgan Chase CEO said the U.S. risks losing the dollar status as the world's reserve currency if the country can no longer boast the world's strongest military and economy in the future. If we're not the strongest military in 25 years and the strongest economy, we won't be the reserve currency either, Dimon told PBS over the weekend. The world will be fragmented, and it will be very dangerous for us. While it might be initially seem like the armed forces have nothing to do with the greenback, American military and economic might are tied up inextricably together with the dollar, according to Daniel McDowell, Syracuse University's Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs Associate Director. He's more or less saying that a weak military is a sign of a weak economy, and you would expect that the currency would kind of follow suit, McDowell told Fortune. If you think of the economy as being the underlying foundation of dollar dominance, the military is the icing on the cake. While the international finance expert emphasized that economic strength is the strongest indicator of the dollar's strength, he also outlined several scenarios in which the dollar dominance could take a hit, even if a strong U.S. economy because of a weakened military. One of them is international relations. If allies believe that the U.S. is vulnerable to attack and isn't capable of defending itself, they would start to worry about their dollar-denominated assets here. A strong military makes a currency more appealing, because it's a signal to foreign investors that their assets are safe, McDowell said. It matters because a strong defense projects security of assets in a way that is distinct from the financial regulations in a country. Similarly, if the U.S. had a weaker military and U.S. allies worried it wouldn't be able to come to their defense if needed, they wouldn't have the same incentive to buy treasury bonds and invest in the country. These arguments would be that if the United States can no longer defend other countries, those countries see the dollar as a bit less appealing because in the currency state, loaning dollars to the United States government helps the U.S. pay for the defense that you benefit from, McDowell said. Another scenario is if the U.S. entangles itself in an all-out conflict with a rival like China or Russia and loses decisively, markets would react, and the world could view the country as diminished, an attitude that might leak into the dollar. I don't think Iran's a great case here, because it's not an all-out war, McDowell said. But in the future scenario, where the United States does get engaged, or would get engaged, theoretically, in an all-out conflict, and with a major power, and come out without a victory, I think that would have implications for the U.S., both its political but also its economic reputation. And that would have implications for the dollar in terms of how overseas investors view that. But institutions and economic dynamism, how fast an economy innovates and shifts resources, also play a role in the dollar's strength. Eswar Prasad, a senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institution, told Fortune those factors are far more important to a reserve currency status than an economy's size or military power. But he acknowledged their role. Of course, a weakening of U.S. economic and military power and an erosion of its domestic institutions, as well as geopolitical influence, will hurt the dollar's dominance, even though the lack of any serious rivals will prevent it from being displaced as the dominant international payment and reserve currency, Prasad said. A few quick words here on the housing market. The U.S. housing market is still stuck in a rut. This from Fortune magazine, dated August 12th. Sales of existing homes in the U.S. dropped to 4.06 million in July, down from 4.13 million in June. That's not good, according to Pantheon Microeconomics' Oliver Allen. The further dip in sales leaves them in the middle of a depressed range that they've been stuck in for around 3 years now, at around a quarter below their average level in the 5 years leading up to the pandemic, he said in a note. Looking further ahead, a significant housing market recovery is unlikely as long as monetary policy remains relatively tight, the labor market subdued, confidence depressed, and population growth constrained by tighter immigration policies. And a few words now on the potential outcome of the Strait of Hormuz situation. Again, Fortune magazine from August 11th. The irony of Iran's plan for tolls on Hormuz, they might be cheaper than you think. If Iran got its way and imposed shipping tolls on the Strait of Hormuz at around 5-7% of each oil cargo, it might generate close to $20 billion a year for the regime in Tehran, Fortune's Jordan Bloom estimates. But such astronomical tolls won't be accepted by the U.S., or Iran's Gulf neighbors, geopolitical and energy analysts say. That means that the stalemate will drag on indefinitely, or Iran will eventually accept a lesser, but still substantial, financial payout. Either way, the Middle East and, as a result, global energy markets are forever changed. The ironic thing, if Iran sets the price too high, the Gulf countries will be forced to adjust and export their oil over land, thus rendering the strait irrelevant. And the Iranians likely understand that they would have to keep the fees low enough to be economically viable. The strait is never going to go back to its pre-war status quo, said Gregory Brew, senior analyst for Iran and Energy with the Eurasia Group. There's going to be a permanently recognized Iranian role in managing the waterway. An unattractive deal with Iran is the best of limited bad options, he believes. Here's a quick one on the Consumer Price Index. CPI inflation is expected to be soft, keeping the Fed on hold. We'll get a new Consumer Price Index, headline inflation, today from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it is August 12th, by the way. The expectation is for a soft number, around 2.5%, which would tempt the Fed to keep interest rates on hold again in September. Today's U.S. July consumer price inflation data will be less precise than in the past. There are more gaps in the data, and those gaps are filled in by educated guesswork. UBS's Paul Donovan advised clients this morning. The reaction to a single weaker employment report shows the potency of any data release at the moment. Absent the war, that figure would likely be at or near 2%. Core inflation has embedded energy and freight costs, airfares, etc. 1 year on, tariff effects should add less to the inflation rate. Now here's one that you actually may not have thought of before. Again, Fortune magazine, August 11th. Climate change threatens Italy's $4.7 billion cheese banks that holds wheels of Parmigiano as collateral. In the hills of Emilia-Romagna, a bank vault holds more than 500,000 wheels of Parmigiano Reggiano, worth well over 300 million euros. The vault belongs to the bank Credito Emiliano, which has accepted young wheels of Parmigiano Reggiano as collateral for loans to dairy farms since 1953. But now, extreme heat is threatening Italy's cheese banks, Fortune's Kat Giannino reports. Thanks to this year's record heat waves in Europe, energy consumption rose about 30%, forcing the bank to upgrade cooling systems and boilers, add insulation, and expand renewable power generation. And because it's so hot outside, cows lie down more and eat less, reducing milk production by up to 10% a year. Longer and more intense heat events hit the quantity and quality of milk, ultimately driving up costs that may not show up in the supply chain until months later. And here's a really, really short one. 90%, the percentage of the global humanoid robot population controlled by Chinese companies, according to research from the energy consultancy Wood Mackenzie. For instance, State Grid Corporation of China, a utility company, has committed $1 billion U.S. dollars in 2026 to procure 8,500 AI-enabled autonomous robots across more than 600 specialized tasks, signaling that robotics has become critical national infrastructure, Wood Mackenzie said in a statement. And with that, folks, we're done. This is Sun Sounds of Arizona. The program is Business World, and I'm Steve Klein. Thank you so much for listening. See you next Monday at 11 a.m. Bye for now.